This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 35. And welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the USA Firearm Training Network. And I am your host, Riley Bowman. And today I'm also joined by...
Jacob Paulson.
Welcome, sir. We missed you last week.
Yeah, vacation was better.
Why don't you tell us where you were?
Happiest place on earth, Disneyland. Watch those kids go down Splash Mountain all freaked out and loving it.
That's awesome, man. I'm glad you had a good time. Glad you made it back safe, too.
Yeah.
And I'm also glad you didn't get shot while you were in California, not able to defend yourself.
Hey, you know, we could have a podcast just about Disneyland security. It's not bad.
Yeah, they do take it pretty seriously. Except for if you're at Disney World or at a resort and, like, alligators get on the loose. Then they kind of suck at it.
I could see that being a challenge.
Anyway, coming up today, we review some justified shooter stats. We actually have some statistics. Ooh. And talk about some recent events. But first, today's episode, we don't have a sponsor. In fact, we would like to unsponsor the Brave Response holster. We're selling so many of these stupid things that we're just here to tell you today to stop buying them. In fact, we have to apologize in advance because today's episode is going to be very short, and because we got to get back to like 200 emails and who knows how many phone calls and voicemails that we've missed over the weekend. And plus, our customer service guy is out sick today. So Jacob and I are literally just totally like, I don't have hair to pull out, but if I did, I'd be pulling it out.
It's not that we don't like the holster anymore. The problem is that you guys like it too much. We've obviously sponsored it so much that all of you have been buying these things. And now it's like, you know, it's darn near like a 30-day lead time on these things. Like we liked shipping them within 2 days. And because of all you, now here we are stuck like 30 days behind.
Yep. So anyway, here's your update, folks. If you're listening and you've ordered a holster within the last 2 weeks, some of yours may be on the way. We got a whole bunch out on Friday. If you've ordered since July 1st or 2nd, you probably still have maybe another day or two to wait. Anyway, so just be patient. They're coming. They're on their way. So with that, Jacob, why don't we get into the news?
The news, yes. So let's start with Waffle House.
Waffle House. This is kind of a cool story. And I guess we classify it in the justified shooter segment.
I guess by definition. Yeah.
So what we have is this is a story from Breitbart.com. And the title is Texas Waffle House Customer Shoots Robber Armed with AK-47.
Yeah, so robber goes into Waffle House. You know, I've never been to a Waffle House.
I've been, but it's been a while.
Yeah.
And since knowing that they don't really care for guns, I'd prefer not to.
Yeah. I'd be sad. I'd never get to try out Waffle House. So anyway, guy walks into Waffle House, 2:30 a.m. on July 7th, armed with AK-47, robs the diner, gets money. It says he robbed several of the customers directly. I assume he also got something out of the cash register. Mm-hmm. And then he walked out. No shots fired.
Yeah. So the interesting thing is that one of the customers followed the man out of the restaurant and attempted to stop him.
Yeah, in the parking lot. So some red flags that I'm sure we'll be coming back to, but to satisfy the curiosity of the listeners. So the customer says that he knew his wife was on her way to the Waffle House and feared she might be in danger in the parking lot. He was afraid the armed man might harm her or others in the parking lot.
Yeah. So I understand that sentiment, but there's a part of me that has to wonder or ask. You knew that. Maybe it was an afterthought. Maybe he just seriously thought that after the guy left, he went, oh, crap, my wife is coming. But I kind of almost feel like that if you were going to actually exchange shots with this guy, that the more tactically sound place to do it might be inside the store. Unless you're thinking about the lives of other customers, you know, coming into the crossfire or something like that. I could see that. But, you know, keep in mind, this dude's got an AK-47 style rifle. You've got a handgun, tactically, that's a bad position to be in.
Yeah.
Especially out in the open.
Yeah, I'm inclined to say he just should have let the whole thing go. I mean, at this point, at least at this point anyway,
fair
right?
Point.
Where the guy has robbed customers, he's got cash and loot in hand.
Let him go.
Yeah, I mean, what would give you the indication at that point that he's walked out of the store that he intends to harm anybody?
Right. Yeah, I'm famous for saying, you know, stuff is just stuff. People is what we really people is what we really care about.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, he got his stuff. He got his money, whatever it was he was there to get. Let him go. But here's the wrap-up of the story is this man does follow him out of the store and fires at him several times from his handgun. And he does, in fact, hit and stop the robber. And in fact, now the robber, nobody has even been able to identify him yet. Keep in mind, this story is as of July 13th, and we haven't seen an update yet. But he remains in critical condition and apparently not able to speak or identify himself. So they've posted photos of various tattoos on this man's body in the hopes that somebody could identify him. So if you know of anybody that was established in Texas of 1990, you might want to call DeSoto Police Department, let them know that they've got your man.
That's right, with a great tat right on his hand. Yeah,
yeah.
That anyway. States as much.
Yep. So, you know, and then also too in the article does point out that this man was carrying his Texas handgun license to carry, his LTC, which allows Texas residents to carry concealed as well as carry openly in Texas. The interesting thing, kind of the other part of the story, though, too, being that Waffle House, it does have a, you know, gun-free zone policy. There's no talk about them doing anything about the matter. But this is not the first time that people have brought guns in and used them to rob Waffle House restaurants. So that gun-free zone is really working out well for you.
Yeah, and last time they did issue a public statement essentially saying, you know, we're glad you survived. You know, thanks for shooting the bad guy, but please don't bring guns into our restaurants again. Remember that? That was October 2015, I think.
I do. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, good times. So there you go. Another interesting story, and actually kind of not so much a story as it is, it's an FBI report, and we got to give credit and a shout out to Cameron, one of our listeners who shared this with us. It's an FBI report mentioned by Senator Murphy, and the title is basic. Well, it's not the title of the report, but what we gather from it is that 1 in 32 homicides is justified.
Yeah, this is hilarious. So Cameron is a great listener. I won't share his last name. He probably wouldn't like that, but Cameron's actually great. He sends us emails every once in a while. He actually just wrote a huge article for us for our website about buying ammunition online. We haven't published it yet, but Cameron, you rock, and thanks for listening and for sending us stuff. You're really cool. But the funny thing was that Senator Murphy, who brought this up, he's actually an anti-gunner, and the report was put together by the Violence Policy Center, which is also a huge anti-gun organization. And so they were pulling statistics out of the FBI UCR report, the Uniform Crime Reporting, from the last several years. And they make the argument in their report that guns are rarely used to stop bad guys. Like, in fact, I think their headline says, guns are rarely used to kill criminals or stop crimes. And then they go on to give all this information that I'm like, actually, it's pretty good. we're doing right. Better than we think.
Right. And so if you really dig in there, maybe you'll quote from it for us. I don't know. But basically, there are 32 homicides that are committed by criminals, right?
Right. This number is specifically from 2012. So in 2012, for every 32 homicides committed by a criminal, right? Bad guy shoots someone and kills them. Mm-hmm. There's one justifiable homicide, which is defined by the FBI as the killing of a felon during the commission of a felony by a private citizen.
Right.
So this is actually really good. Like, in my mind, I'm like, dang, like we've empowered more awesome gun owners than I thought. Like, for every 32 criminal killings, we have one justified shooter.
Right.
Like, that's phenomenal. And of course, this is only talking about people who died, right? Like, we don't, this excludes statistics from injuries or, mm-hmm. you know, missed shots that still stopped crimes or whatever else. This is purely homicides For every 32 criminal homicides, there's one justifiable homicide in the United States. In case you're curious of the actual numbers, in 2012, there were 8,342 criminal gun-related homicides. And in the same year, there were 259 justifiable homicides involving a private citizen using a firearm. So one in 32. And in fact, I'm actually impressed because I think if we were to... Here's the way to actually, like, if you want to put pressure on the Violence Policy Center, here's the call out, okay? So I hope they hear this and they respond. The real question is, of the 8,342 criminal gun homicides that they reference here, and how many of those was there an opportunity for a gun owner, a private citizen, to stop the crime?
Mm.
That would be a far better indicator of the viability of the of our argument, right? Our argument in our community is the good guys can stop bad guys with guns,
yep.
right? And the only way to measure that is to look at opportunity. So if we went back and looked at the 8,342 criminal gun homicides and said, okay, of these 8,342 criminal gun homicides, in how many of those circumstances was the victim armed and capable potentially of you know returning fire?
Mm-hmm.
And they if they came back and said, well, you know, in all of them, then I would say, well, dang, like we suck at this. Like obviously we're not doing a very good job. But if they come back and say, well, actually like 0%, then I would say that the statistic's irrelevant then. Like then what's your like mm. that does not make an argument that the good guys can't stop bad guys because there was no opportunity for them to do so. What you're really saying is that on 259 occasions in 2012, there was an opportunity for a good guy to stop a bad guy, and they did so efficiently.
Yep. Good point and a good argument. Awesome. What is not so awesome, however, is the recent news that came out yesterday out of Baton Rouge, and I'm sure many of our listeners have heard this news already at this point. We just felt like, you know, we should at least mention and address it. What we know at this time is that there was a, I believe, a 29-year-old Iraq war veteran, honorably discharged, and he apparently was very dissatisfied with the current state of things in the country, not happy with law enforcement, use of force, particularly on American African people. So he ambushes and shoots and kills three police officers, I think wounds three or four others. Cops end up shooting him dead. So, you know, it's all done and over with for that part. But, you know, here in basically, what, a little more than a week, we have two very deliberate and targeted events towards law enforcement and resulting in very severe casualties. I believe it's probably the deadliest 10 days we've ever seen in law enforcement as far as like perpetrators killing law enforcement. You know, obviously there was quite a few officers that were killed during 9/11, so that would be excluded from that. So pretty serious stuff. I'm really concerned, Jacob. I sometimes wonder, is there an end in sight? Because I fear that, you know, and rightfully so, that events like this are going to lead law enforcement to do even more, to be even be more careful, which, you know, and to be more proactively responding to potential threats, which might then in turn lead to more people being disgruntled and then, you know, shooting more cops. The fact of the matter is, I mean, you know, there are bad cops and cops that have done bad things, but you know, we just also, this was in the news and we're not mentioning it officially in the podcast, but I just saw this morning, it popped up on news alerts on my phone that the final officer in the Baltimore case involving Freddie Gray. And that was another incident that kind of prompted a lot of Black Lives Matters movements, right? Freddie Gray, who was, he died in custody while he was being transported to jail. And all the officers, as of this morning, officially are all acquitted and found, you know, no fault as far as this his death. And so, you know, here we have all this pent-up anger and frustration that a lot of it has started from events that, you know, when judges and juries, many of these juries, I'm sure, have Black people on them, and they are looking at the evidence and they're going, this cop is not at fault, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's all this frustration and all of this violence that's taking place over nothing. in my opinion.
Yeah, this is hard, right? I'm trying to be very sensitive about what I say. I mean, black lives do matter. White lives matter too. Cops' lives matter. You know, lives just, like, generally speaking, matter. And to me, it's very hypocritical to say, you know, like an eye for an eye, like, you know, you take one of ours, we'll take one of yours. I know that, you know, history has proven that sometimes it requires violence to make change. And so I don't want to neglect that. I don't want to ignore that that's an absolute reality, that sometimes you can make protests and sign petitions and it doesn't really do anything. Sometimes it does require violence to make change. But, you know, as far as I'm aware, these officers in Baton Rouge were killed. Did anyone accuse them of doing something wrong? As far as I know, they're just innocent cops. Like, they're just dead.
Well, and I'll tell you this much, you know, if people are frustrated about the whole Alton Sterling shooting, which was in Baton Rouge.
Sure, sure.
Those cops, they're not even working right now. So, like, if you're just shooting other cops that had nothing to do with that to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, if this had been like an assassination on like one of those cops, like I'd still be sad, frankly, that someone would take justice into their own hands and all that. But it would be a little bit less arbitrary, ridiculous. Now, I'm not justifying, just in case anyone quotes me, right? Like, I'm not saying that we need to go like find and, you know, seek vigilante justice on anyone. I'm merely saying, like, we're talking about innocent life. Like, we're talking about completely. I mean, and maybe some of these cops were morons or bad or I don't know, but I suspect the shooter didn't know either. It was arbitrary. And that's mm-hmm. really what saddens me, is it's like, these are just people who are out doing the service of their job. Like, they're just doing their thing, you know, like, what's next? Like, you said, you know, where does this kind of thing stop?
Yep.
I often wonder too, if sometimes people who decide to take these kind of matters into their own hand don't realize that they are making their own situation worse.
Exactly. Like that was kind of what I was getting at.
We're not making it better. It's just a vicious cycle.
It's just going to make things worse. Yeah. You know, and I was just reminded too, this is probably my last thought on this whole thing. It was a news story I saw, but it's not officially a part of the podcast, but there's this group in Minnesota. And of course, they've been protesting over, you know, well, besides Alton Sterling, but also this Philando Castile, and they've been shutting down the interstates and all that up there in the Twin Cities area. And one of their leaders, I believe his name is Oluchi Omeoga, or something like that. I think I heard an interview with him on a news program somewhere, and he just didn't impress me all that much. But anyway, they've released a press release. And the press release in there, they're saying, you know, Black Lives Matters. We need to get law enforcement, you know, under control. And not only that, but they say that they want to see a complete defunding and disarmament and disbanding of police in America.
I don't know what to say.
That's going
to
go over really well.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. you caught me off guard on that one. You know, here's one of my maybe final thoughts on this. I'm thinking of, you know, I know that I said sometimes in history it takes violence to make change, but it doesn't always. Like, I think back on our civil rights movement, and, you know, you kind of compare, you know, your Martin Luther King Jr. story, you know, Dr. King, to what was going on in California at the time. You know, you had two different civil rights movements in different parts of the country, both led by relatively charismatic leaders. One who was really going about it in a peaceful, you know, way, like, hey, it's all about peaceful, you know, let's stand up to this, but let's do it in a peaceful way. And then you had a different movement going on in California, which is the opposite of peaceful. And it was pretty clear, you look at that story, it's pretty clear who had the greater effect. Like, it's, you know, like, it, clearly you can peaceably make change in this country. And I think, yeah, maybe we're preaching to the choir here. So maybe you know, some of these things don't need to be said to people who would listen to this podcast. But I think that we all have an obligation to stand up and say, hey, you know, not all cops are bad. In fact, I'd love to believe that the majority of them are good, and we need to you know, say that out loud so that we're propagating as much positive emotion as other people are perhaps propagating negative emotion.
Sure. Great. Well, we want to do one more thing here before we wrap up the show today, and that is we want to give a special shout out to a special listener in Pennsylvania. And what was his name? Terry?
I have no idea.
I think his name is Terry. I'm sorry, Terry, if in fact that was your name, but we got your voicemail. We appreciate you leaving the message with us. It was a little bit crackly and like it was probably not the greatest connection you had with your phone. So it was a little bit difficult to make out everything you're saying. But he just said over and over again how much he really appreciated the podcast. And we really appreciate you and for listening. I think he said he works at a gun shop. And he's got a lot of his fellow employees there at the gun shop listening to the podcast as well. That just totally made my day hearing that. So just knowing that, you know, like gun guys, like true gun guys, which anybody that works in a gun shop is a true gun guy, that they would actually listen to the podcast. So thank you very much. We appreciate it. I believe Terry in Pennsylvania. Did you have something else to add?
Yeah, not only do we appreciate you listening, but we appreciate you telling us, you know, thank you. Yeah. We're going to keep putting on this podcast. Listeners, don't be concerned, but it certainly doesn't hurt when we get the positive feedback.
Totally.
Or constructive feedback, I might add.
Yeah, absolutely. And so speaking of which, the podcast, this is the first time we've ever video recorded it. And so, hello, everybody. And also, it's the first time we've recorded together in the same room in probably 20 episodes.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
So many people might not even realize that we record it remotely using a special software program that mostly works. There's a few downsides to it. The sound quality of today's episode probably sounds a little bit improved over what our normal episodes do, just because we're recording live right here in the same room. Right on this recording device.
But we're anyway. Also not going to do any post-production because we don't have time for it.
That's right. So speaking of time, we're going to, I think, have to let everybody go right now. Once again, no sponsor this week. In fact, we're unofficially we're officially unsponsoring the Brave Response holster.
Until we get caught up on orders. You can order one. We won't stop you, but it may be a while till you get it.
Yeah, it's going gangbusters. So everybody just know we're doing everything we can to stay caught up, to get caught up, and to continue doing everything else that we are supposed to do, including producing this podcast. So we're going to say goodbye for now. We got to get back to those hundreds of emails and phone calls. We appreciate the listen. We appreciate your patience. We appreciate all the love and all the feedback we get. And if you haven't subscribed, go and do it now. So with that, we're going to let you all go. Jacob?
Until Wednesday.
Until Wednesday, indeed. And in fact, I'm not entirely certain what we're talking about this Wednesday. And you know what? Because we're out of time, I don't care.
We will
figure it out. So take care, everybody. Watch your six. Watch your back, which means the same thing. Be safe. Train hard. We'll catch you later on the Wednesday episode. And we're going to try this. Fade that out. And here comes our legal disclaimer.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.
Goodbye.